meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to the CCWG Accountability Workstream 2 Jurisdiction Subgroup Meeting Number 8. First, welcome. Second, to set the stage, this is our second to last meeting before Hyderabad. We are meeting 1 week from today at 1900 hours, and that on the 27th of October. That will be our last meeting before Hyderabad. Secondly, we did have a meeting of the rapporteurs. Just to note that I think we are, you know, experiencing some issues in this group that are no different from what most of the other groups are experiencing. And I think we're moving forward, but it would be helpful to get a wider variety of people involved, particularly in commenting on the documents, and even more than the marginal comments, actually writing text in the documents. The everything in the margins will disappear when the document becomes final. What is in the text will be edited. It may disappear too, but that's the field of play. Everything in the margins is commentary, and will not get on the field of play unless it's put there. So, you know, the point of being in a member in a subgroup is to engage and assist in the drafting of the documents as well as in the formulation of the positions and recommendations. So, once again, encourage. We have a few very active members, and we need more moving forward. So, so I see a request that the rapporteur take on board the comments in the margin. That's not really the way I think it's best to work. I think it's best if the members of the group work in the document. This is, the concept is not that this is a rapporteur-written document. I think that would be inappropriate in the sense it turns a rapporteur into a kind of a receiver of bits of information. This is supposed to be a collaborative document, so request that we you know, get if you have something you think that appears and should appear in the text, you put it in the text. If you have a comment on somebody else's stuff in the text, it's appropriate to comment. It's also appropriate to suggest revisions to it. That's there. I see a request for tips on how to edit a Google Doc. It's basically like Microsoft Word, but I'm sure can find a primer that will introduce it to those who have had the somewhat dubious pleasure of working in Google Doc. On to the first substantive point or substantive issue. We have the multiple layers of jurisdiction document that has been set up for a couple of weeks now. Let's see if I actually apologize. I think there's a copy on the list that Vinay sent around. If I don't know if staff can grab that, or I will send it to Bernie's Gmail address. That would be good to get that up. So the primary point of this document was to include, first to define what the multiple layers of jurisdiction are, essentially, you know, fact exploration, definitional exploration, so that we're talking consistently about the same things. So here we have in front of us, I guess this is the, unfortunately, the cleanest, the clean version of the document. One of the challenges of, there we are. Now at least we have some of the comments and can see the mess we've made, this creative mess that we have made in the document. So I think the important thing here first is to try to get these definitions correct and agreed to. This document has somewhat bled over into effects of jurisdiction and other commentary, if you will. Let's see, I see we have a couple of hands up. Not sure who was first between David and Caboose in my screen. It says David, so why don't you go ahead.
Greg, hi, it's David McCauley. I think I was second. I think Caboose was actually first, so I should let him go first.
Thank you. The tablet version of Adobe Connect does not sort by who goes first. Caboose?
Greg, I have a serious question. I guess, or I feel that there is a tendency that we do not make any progress. The way that discussion is going, many fronts are open, and when the various or multiple fronts are open, the battle is already lost. There is no concentration on what we're jumping from one to the other. I have downloaded all emails, and I see that even with the simple understanding of what is the law, civil law, public law, private law, international public law, international private law, and what somebody told, he said he's a lawyer, a state action doesn't want any public law, and private action doesn't want any private law, and so on and so forth. It reminds me of a battle, that a navir was wanted to get into the battle, but he made 10 miles forward, 12 miles backward, 10 miles forward, 12 miles backward, but never reached the battle, and the battle was finished. This is the feeling that I have. I may be wrong, but that is that. This is the eighth meeting, and still we don't know where we have to start. Do we start with the multi-layer? Do we start with the definition of the public law, private law? Do we start with the analysis of gaps? You mentioned that we don't need to do that. Yes, I agree, for the time being. We don't need to talk about the changing of the item location for the time being or never. That I agree. But let us know that we are really, what are the starting points? This email, instead of resolving something disturbing, creates division. Someone says from the 1st of October, ICANN is totally a private company and does not under any public law. Someone says that we don't need to do anything at all. I was in a meeting 10 days ago. There was one official said that it is better to take this issue off the table. Are we going to take this issue off the table in a very clever manner? That means we discuss and discuss and discuss, and once everyone exhausted, we have no time and says that the status quo, no change. I am not lawyer, I am not attorney, I am not admitted to the legal bar, and so on and so forth. I am a simple person, but perhaps with average smartness. So please direct me where we are and how we proceed. I think think that people doesn't want any process at all, because they don't want to have anything under jurisdiction. They say that the jurisdiction is okay, the existing court is okay, and everything should be okay. That's all. So please take me out for this mistaken way of thought. I hope that you can prove that I mistake. I have misunderstood everything. But that is all these emails said. I read all of them and put them together and try to compare them, maybe a spreadsheet, a comparison between what you said, what the Nigerian said, what the other said, and the other said. Total contradictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Unfortunately, it's a little hard to understand. A lot of what you said was muffled and also seemed to be going into the red zone in terms of gain. There was distortion as well. But I guess I would ask, what is your suggestion? If you believe that we're not making progress, which I don't share that belief, but what would be your suggestion, having observed this and participated, for making progress as you suggest?
My suggestion is that you, as a chair, in consultation with the people, establish an order of priority and says that in order to solve the problem, we have to start with something we take up to somewhere. And what is that? Is that multilayer? Take it. Is that definition of the applicable law? Take it. So I don't know which one. Establish an order of priority that we can start something without waiting for something else, and put the remaining part to see whether we have time to go that or no. But something which is essential and top priority. Which is that one? You are a lawyer, you are a good writer. In a matter of half an hour, you wrote 2 pages of reply to one person. 2 pages. And made all of them blue. Very, very good writer. I am not like you. I have to take hours because I have 2 finger titles. And my English is not my mother tongue. But you can write very well. You understand for that. Give me please, what is the first priority that we have to tackle in order to take us somewhere to proceed with the other? Give yourself from the definition of applicable law that you mentioned several times, or give yourself from the multiple layers, or what? Where do you start? I am, as a person, as a member of this group, at your full disposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I do think, in fact, we have set priorities here. I think we have one of them in front of us right now, which is the defining of the multiple layers of jurisdiction, having a common understanding of what they are and moving into their effect. And I think more specifically in the second document in the agenda, we are focusing, in fact, on a specific question, which is the influence of the jurisdictions for the relating to resolution of disputes and their effect or influence on the actual operation of ICANN policy and its accountability mechanism. So that is really where our focus is in terms of problem solving. David?
Greg, thanks. It's David McCauley for the transcript. And like Caboose, my hand was up for an issue before we got to multiple layers of jurisdiction. And what it is just a comment and a question. The comment is with relation to something that Christopher and Yvette have been saying in the chat. If there is a link to a brief tutorial for Google Docs, I would suggest that it be put on our wiki space, and when you talk to the other rapporteurs, that they've all put it on their own wiki spaces. It would help. I'm one of those for whom the Google Docs becomes difficult at times, and I could use some help. My question goes to what Jorge and Vinay and Farzi have been also talking about in the chat, and that is when you tell us, Greg, that you would like us to sort of put text in there, I've been making, I think, comments, but I guess what I'm reading is now we should make suggestions rather than going into the left part of the document and actually changing text. Is that right?
Thanks, David, and I think first to take the Google Doc issue generally, I agree. You know, it'd be helpful for those who don't use Google Docs a lot or never have, to understand the general, you know, technical approach to successfully working in it generically. And I'll see if, you know, I'll ask, you know, staff and the other rapporteurs if they have anything like that, or we can put something together or find something and circulate that. The second question is more specific, which is our working method in Google Docs, yeah, which would be the same in a sense if we were working directly in Microsoft Word. What is our working method in a document that we're all have access to? Yes, David did not say that we shouldn't use Google Docs. He just asked how we should use Google Docs. So the working method that I suggest, first, Google Docs has three modes for dealing with a document. One is edit, which is like working without track changes in Microsoft Word. Everything you put in just appears as plain text. Can't tell who put it in or whether it's open for discussion or not. The second mode is suggest mode. Suggest mode is like working in track changes in Microsoft Word. Anything you put into the text of the document will appear in color, and each person more or less has their own color. And in the margin will appear a little note, if you will, that just shows who entered that particular text into the document. So that's what I call suggest mode. And you can do two things in suggest mode. You can add text to the document itself. And the other thing you can do is add comments, which only appear in the margin and don't change the text in the document part of the document at all. So I think the for purposes of what we're saying, and in terms of having a common vocabulary, let's use the term suggestions to mean suggested text that appears in the main body of the document. And let's use the term comments to mean commentary that is typed directly into the comment field in the right-hand part of the document. So if you're looking at what we have on the screen, the words jurisdiction of incorporation, also of HQ location, has the primary relevance, et cetera, that was put in as a suggestion. And then on top of that, someone else, me actually, commented in the margin, all law in the U.S. is public law. The term public law is not generally used in the U.S. So ultimately it's the text, which initially appears as suggestions, that will get edited and turned into our work product. The comments
Thanks,
are good
Greg.
Places to have a discussion about what's appearing in the text. But we need to work on having stuff appear in the text as well. So that's the working method.
That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And by and large, I would just say that if you do use Microsoft Word or any other text editor that is reasonably similar in approach, Google Docs is just about the same, just as long as you understand that you need to be in suggest mode to work in what looks like track changes. Everything else is more or less the same. So that is the case. So I see in the margin, I think entering the Google Docs is necessary to have a collaborative document move along. It's useful to have important issues, arguments, justifications in the e-list so others can see and, if needed, weigh in. I agree with that. I think for broad-ranging discussions among the group, the comment balloons on the side of the document are not the ideal place to have a significant discussion about concepts. they are a good place to have a narrow discussion about editing a piece of text or comments on what that text is saying. Now the issue, of course, is that things in the mailing list need to get into the document. And as much as the rapporteurs can and will, you know, obviously very active in the mailing list and monitoring the mailing list, will try to bring concepts in. It's also helpful when others who are participating are putting things into the document as things seem to move forward in a particular email. This, again, is a collaborative approach. If I was the only person editing the document, I could have it as a Word document and just circulate it periodically, but then nobody else would be able to see it, and nobody else would be able to work in it. This is supposed to be a collaborative process. So, and I think also it would be helpful to have more questions. I understand some of us are lawyers, some of us are U.S. lawyers even, some of us are not. It's very helpful to have questions coming from those who want understanding, probing questions. There's no question really that's there may be questions that are out of scope, but within scope there shouldn't be any questions that are out of bounds as we initially approach any particular topic. To Johnny.
Thank you very much, Greg. Johnny speaking. I am really sorry that we spent all this time discussing whether we have to use or how to use Google Docs. From the beginning, I said that ICANN is putting for us a comprehensive wiki, which is very easy to use, which permit the collaborative work on a text, but one at a time. This is the only difference with the Google Docs. There is also the option of comments, so people can make comments, and the pen holder can include them or discuss them, etc. So today, Pedro sent an email saying that he is not able to access Google Docs, and he was asking about the text in Word or PDF. I sent them. But this is a pity. Confluence Wiki is accessible everywhere in the world, and it is the tool that we are working in at large with from the beginning, and it is always working. I don't know why we don't want to use it. Thank you.
I think it would be helpful, and we can look at that for another document. Let's work on these documents so we have them. If there's a primer on working in the Confluence Wiki that staff or those who've worked in it can circulate, that would be helpful for those of us who don't. That'd be helpful, but I think for now let's try to move to substance. And with this current document in front of us, everyone should have scroll control. So what I would like to do, and thank you, Matthew, for suggesting it, after this call within the next 24 hours or so, I'll look to clean this document up further, and also then as a Google Doc, and also recirculate it as a Word doc for further comment. But I'd like to see if there are any comments, questions, potential additions to the document in front of us. What do people think is missing from this? Are they happy with it? Have they read it? Caboose, we're not hearing you right now. Uh, Okay. Looks like Cavus is having some connectivity issues. Anybody else have any comments on this document? Let's move through it somewhat quickly and make sure that David, please go ahead.
Greg, hi, it's David McCauley for the record. This document in part gets to the topic of venue. And since I'm a member of the IRP implementation oversight team, I just thought I would mention, and I think I've made a comment in the document, I'm having a hard time finding it right now, mention the venue considerations of IRP just so that people can have them in the background. And briefly speaking, the idea of IRP is that it would be venue-less almost. Both the existing supplementary rules and the new rules that are almost finalized will encourage the IRP panel to conduct the hearing by electronic means to the extent feasible. If hearings are going to be required on a party's motion, they can take place telephonically or by video conference. I presume that a party could move to have a physical hearing in some place, and it would be up to the panel and their discretion to decide based on the arguments of the parties whether that would be the case. But even that would not touch on venue. It would simply be a place for a hearing to happen. And all of these things are to be decided by the panel with a view towards the bylaws and the articles of incorporation in compliance with applicable law and IRP precedent. So I think it's a fair statement to say, just in the background, as a matter of FYI, that when it comes to venue for an IRP, it will largely be an electronic proceeding that is not going to have venue considerations. Thank you.
Thank you, David. And for those looking at this text, venue is covered in Section 5 of this document. And I think, David, you reason you did not find it is that it was, I think your comments were actually in the other document, the influence of jurisdiction document was what I did there just to get the conversation started in that document. It's a question of, I put in the two types of jurisdiction that directly relate to that choice of law and venue into that document as well. So,
okay, my mistake. I apologize for that then.
No problem. I think as we move forward, we're moving forward toward a single work product. So that'll need to be integrated there. I see Cavus's hand is up.
Yes, just a simple question is that are these 1, 2, and 3 are really layers of the jurisdiction? Because there are just some quotations, more or less, from what is in the bylaw with respect to the ICAL, with respect to the PCI, and with respect to the office, the health headquarters, and so on and so forth. Why we associate that with a layer of jurisdiction? Why? It gives some sort of conclusion. I have fear that you will conclude of this 1, 2, and 3 later on in a way that everything is under the California law and state law or federal law. That's all. And he calls the shop. Is that the case? Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. No, that's not the case. First, the numbered section headings, 1, 2, 3 here, are either taken directly from or based on the multiple layers of jurisdiction that were set forth in Annex 12 for the Workstream 1 document. And, part of our charge in this group is to define and explore the multiple layers of jurisdiction. And what is intended here, first is a generic definition of what that layer of jurisdiction is, and second, a statement of the current situation. So maybe we can have a subheading that says that that's a statement of the current situation. So looking at the first section, 1A is a definition of this layer, generically. B and C are a definition, or rather a statement of the current facts of jurisdiction. Whether they, and then we need to, that in a sense, that is what we need to examine. That's the body that we need to look at to see whether it functions or not for purposes of operation of policy and accountability. And then in this case, D, which is a new subheading, effect of the place of incorporation, is at least, again, an exploration of what the effect is, first generically, and then ideally we need to move forward into the question of how does this influence ICANN's ICANN's ability to operate its policies and accountability procedures. So that is the kind of the working method. So, and the intent here is to look at our job is to look at the existing jurisdictions and see if there are issues that are raised by them. So we have to define what those jurisdictions mean, what they are, and then look at what their effects are. So that's really where the rubber hits the road, to use a figure of speech. When we get to the next document, you'll see more specifically what it is we need. So, you know, certainly we can look at ways to refine this document, but this is to some extent a background document. The intent is to look at the actual influence issues in the second document, and so we can get to that very shortly. If staff can get a copy of that ready, or if they need one of the reporters to do so, let me know. We'll want to move to that second document. But first, I want to see if there are any comments, changes, problems, issues with the text, or anything that's been raised in the comments of this multiple layers of jurisdiction document.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I make some suggestions?
Yes.
Yeah, I have no problem with this first document, if you call them background document. I think it would be more appropriate that you paraphrase this document. First of all, I suggest that if you agree and other people agree, we create a sort of the tabular form. This is the first row, either coming from Annex 12 or coming from the modification of Annex 12 in the legal form bylaw. We put them in one column, and in the middle column you have the views of the subgroup, yes, no, with some comment, and in the last comment any additional notes or any additional comment or remarks. So I have no problem, because you said that it has been taken from Annex 12. Most of them are yes, they are there. Or from the bylaw, new bylaw, they are there. So I have no difficulty, but we would like to know whether the group has any comment on that, because that is one of our tasks, to see whatever it is focusing to is as such, or we have to elaborate that, we have to develop that, we have to explore that, and so on. So that is a suggestion for your considerations, and then you can go to the second document. That is my suggestion. Paraphrase that thing that pursuant to, or in accordance with, or taken, or as stipulated in Annex 12 and bylaw, and put all of this in one column, and the another column in the middle is blank, and your group will comment on that to say, yes, we agree with that, there is no need for further elaborate that, we need to add X to that, and we need to modify that. So it's one way that
that they relinquish it. Similar way that we did in the high human rights, although there was some disagreement, but at least the format worked well. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. I think the issue here is a little bit different than in the human rights and subgroup, which is trying to interpret an agreed text, which is the bylaw. Annex 12 has a number of topics and potential focuses of the work. And so what in this case the highest numbered sections here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, are essentially what's in that document as regards to the multiple layers of jurisdiction, and everything else in this document is our work product. So I'm not sure that the same method would work. And then in the second document, we're getting more to the questions of substance on what those effects will be. So is there anything else on this document? If not, what I'll do is try to take on board or duly account for the marginal commentary and bring it into the text and try to accept as much of the text as possible so it's at least, it's no longer in color. Everything is still a working document until we have a consensus on it, but that'll at least move this document forward. So, staff, is it possible for us to switch to the other document now? Great, thank you. Thank you. So, as we discussed in our last meeting, this question at the top is our one of our overall focus assignments, and I think one about which there is no dispute as to whether it's in scope or out of scope, or generally that this is something we need to wrestle with and answer. So in this document, again, just to try to set the stage for the actual discussion, Section A here just repeats, although it's beginning to diverge, and we'll have to deal with that. Sections 4 and 5 of the document we're just looking at, so these are the two layers of jurisdiction that relate directly to the settlement of disputes, both to bringing disputes, adjudicating them, and to resolving them. So this doesn't refer to the specific countries that might or jurisdictions that are in play. Clearly we know that California is one of them, but there may well be others. But this at least defines the overall issue. So in Section B here, the idea in under A, 1A1, choice of law, and there is no answer to this question yet, but this is clearly a spot right here, this blank 1A, B1A1, asks which jurisdictions' laws or which states' and countries' laws currently govern disputes involving ICANN. And clearly, we know U.S. law in California is one, we know that ICANN is physically present in a number of other countries, and it's the substantive laws of those countries may, in certain cases, apply to ICANN's activities, to its policies, and may be used or usable in the accountability mechanisms. But we don't yet have anything in the text here, and this is a place need to start. And I understand that to some extent we're looking for facts that may not be because of the fact that we don't have a lawyer here from every jurisdiction in which ICANN has a physical presence. We can't answer in any real certainty, you know, what this is, but at least some contributions would be good. In section two here, venue, as we noted, you know, this venue goes to the physical location where a dispute may take place. And as we've been discussing, the IRP, except in the exceptional circumstance where there might be a live in-person hearing, the IRP won't take place in any particular physical location. And it's never commenced in a physical location. It's commenced through the electronic process. Once the parties are engaged, there may be a hearing under exceptional circumstances that's live. And then, you know, in addition to the IRP, other types of disputes that ICANN deals with are covered in arbitration and litigation. So we have some facts here about at least the arbitral setup for ICANN. And again, litigation, we need some exploration of where ICANN can be sued and presumably also where ICANN can sue. And then here we have finally getting to the meat of the question, we have the influence on the operations of ICANN's policies. And some contributions were made overnight for me. I have not reviewed these yet, but this is a first stab at some contributions here to what the influence of ICANN's existing jurisdiction, which is at least U.S. At the moment, is on how ICANN's policies operate. So it would be helpful for others to weigh in on these contributions here, which I believe came from Parminder, both in terms of potential edits to the text. In working in suggest mode, you'll come in your own color. And then if you have comments or commentary on these, you know, then it's appropriate to use the marginal comments. So I don't know if anybody, Caboose, is that an old hand or a new hand? Not getting a response. I'll go to Tijani next.
Thank you, Greg. I have two remarks. Let's start by the IRP. With the modification we did in the CCWG for the IRP, now we will have a standing panel of 7 persons. And since it is contracted by ICANN, and ICANN is located in Los Angeles, the IRP will be located in Los Angeles. Of course, the 3 persons of the dispute panel will be taken from those 7 people. And in this case, when we speak about location, we have to speak about the location where the panel is working. We are not speaking about how hearing is done. This is the first remark. The second remark, 2A of this text define the type of dispute. And I can read contractual dispute with contracted parties, contractual dispute with other third parties, and non-contractual dispute with third parties. I think that there is something missing here, because applicants for a GTLD or for any TLD is not a contractual party yet. He is not a third party. I don't know who are the two other parties in this case. So I think there is not the place for this kind of dispute. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. A couple of things. I'm getting an echo. I think first, we probably should explore your assertion that the fact that the that ICANN is incorporated in Los Angeles makes the place of the IRP Los Angeles. I'm not sure that that's the case, and I don't know if anybody else on this call has a view to that. We can certainly ask ICANN Legal if that's the case. My understanding is that it does not mean that it's taking place in Los Angeles, and it's not subject to U.S. law, except that it's subject to being an IRP result is enforceable in a court of competent jurisdiction, which would include California, if it's being enforced against ICANN, because ICANN is available there for suit. I think that's an assertion that needs to be tested. As far as third party, and apologies for using a term that's somewhat of a legal term of art, it does not mean that there are three parties in a litigation. A third party is, for some reason, nobody talks about second parties, at least among lawyers. The third party is basically somebody who is not you, who is a stranger to you and not part of you. So it's really everybody else. Everybody else is a third party. So that's the sense in which that's used. But we can certainly go through the document and try to use a different term that may not contain any kind of unintended consequences, confusion of meaning. That's that. Caboose, are you back online?
Yes, I was in touch with the meeting. I was saying the following. One, we are moving in the right direction. This is a good start. Second, I know that you use the word influence, which is coming from the Annex 12 and the bylaw, but I don't think it's influence. It's impact or consequence, but not influence. There is no influence of ICANN jurisdiction. There is the impact, but not influence. So we are not obliged to take the same text of the Annex 12. So I don't think that there is no influence. ICANN does not have any influence. Impact of ICANN's jurisdiction, that is a better. Thirdly, I disagree with you in terms of the third party. Party one and two. Let us say someone who complains, a plaintiff, and someone who defendant. These are the two parties. If there are other parties, it is a third party. But any of these two are not, in any case, considered as third party. Third party is someone or some entity which is outside the first and second party. So that is it. So I don't agree that we say that third party is an estranged people. Estranged, yes, but it is not belonged or associated in every case with the second or first party of the dispute. This is my understanding of the third party. We have used it in many conventions internationally, and that is the meaning. The two people that put together have something without a third party, but those were not part of those two issues related to those two parties. So that is the definition of third party, and thus I misunderstood your definition. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think I got most of what you're saying. Unfortunately, there's been some distortion. I think it may help if you back off from the microphone just a little bit in future. But thank you for that. David McCauley.
Thanks, Greg. It's David McCauley again. And I just wanted to comment on the point that Tijani raised about the standing panel. It's my understanding that the standing panel will be selected, and one of the criteria for selecting the panel will be regional diversity. So my expectation is that the seven members, assuming that the seven on the standing panel, will be dispersed around the world, and they, too, will be working electronically. It's a fair statement to say that because ICANN is headquartered in Los Angeles, that that law may come to bear at some point. But the rule, or the direction, rather, for an IRP is to decide cases based on the articles and the bylaws and IRP precedent as influenced by applicable law. And we all know that the term applicable law is under discussion in a number of these sub-teams and is not yet clear, I think. It could be California, but it could be another place. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave. And I think you raised a question, which I kind of put in the chat because I don't really know the answer myself. What substantive law is applied in an IRP? Is it a choice of law decision that as one that might be made in a court? And we've had some discussion about conflict of laws analysis in the margins of some of the documents. Is it whatever the panelists bring in? And I think that's what I've seen in the past, as the panelists kind of seem to come from their own legal traditions and seem to kind of use kind of a mix of legal traditions, almost like a smorgasbord, to come up with things. So it's certainly a good question. And whether ICANN's physical location has anything to do with that choice is a question, too. I do want to be a little bit careful about the scope of this group, and especially, you know, in working with the IRP IoT group too. So we need to look at what the consequences of ICANN's jurisdictions are, and if there is, you know, a substantive law question regarding IRP, we should get into it. But I think we don't need to examine everything about the IRP because there is another group for that. Cavus, is that a new hand or
yes,
old hand?
That's a question. Could you put the question of Tijani for further discussion? The answer is not yes or no. The answer is not, as David said, and perhaps not exactly as you said. In addition to the diversity of panelists, there's a little impact on this. It depends on the case. You could not say that totally outside the California or United States or inside. It depends on the case under the IRP. So could you put it in the question for further discussions? This is a very important point to Johnny raised. Thank you.
I am putting that something like that in the chat. And I agree that there's definitely an element of us conflict of law decision in the specific in each specific case that may vary, but at least that's what I believe. So we'll need to look at that. We're down to our last few minutes, and I think this is a good discussion here on this document. I would like to continue it on the list and on in the document by continuing to make suggestions in the text and comments about the text in the margin, as well as using the email list for more lengthy, back and forth discussions. David, is that a new hand or an old one?
Greg, it was a new one. I was just going to mention the bylaw section that has direct application here.
Okay.
It's,
go ahead.
It's fairly brief. It's Article 4.3V, as in Victor, and it basically, it's short. I'll read it. It says, subject to this section 4.3, all IRP decisions shall be written and made public and shall reflect a well-reasoned application of how the dispute was resolved in compliance with the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws, as understood in light of prior IRP decisions decided under the same or an equivalent prior version of the provision of the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws at issue and norms of applicable law. That's it. So it seems clear that if push comes to shove, if the parties make motions, the panel may have to decide these kind of questions. But generally speaking, that's the that's the sort of rubric within which the IRP panel is meant to address a question. And there's another section that says it will be a de novo decision or proceeding. Thank you.
Thank you, David. So de novo means without considering any prior dispute mechanisms between the parties, or at least without considering the results of those. Just to look very quickly at our last two items here. Preparation of status report. This is something the rapporteurs are required to do for each group. It does not need to be long. It basically needs to just summarize where we're at, a snapshot of our current state of affairs. So I will prepare something, or Vinay and I will prepare something and circulate it around. With apologies, I'll probably put it up as a Google Doc, but I'll also circulate it as a Word Doc, or if it's short enough, just in the text of an email, and people can comment on that. That needs to be done by the end of the weekend, basically. Technically the Friday, but maybe the weekend. And then last in our almost no time is an open question. What do people want to accomplish in Hyderabad? Is there something a face-to-face of our subgroup would help accomplish? Caboose?
Yeah, at least we should have on table all the questions that we need to address in the order of priority. You started with this multiple layers, very good, and then the next step should be what else? And at least we should have that one, and although some people there are against to having any deadline, but we should consider that we don't have unlimited time to go in for years. There is a limited time, and we have to have some time management and so on and so forth. And we try to not have this diversion of the ideas and the email that the people will be further divided. We try to further converge rather than further diverge and so on and so forth. So objective in Hyderabad, what is the next step and in what period we have to do in the order of priorities. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Tijani.
Thank you, Greg. Tijani speaking. Shall we have a face-to-face meeting for our subgroup? My understanding is that the CCWG plenary will have a face-to-face meeting. It is not the subgroups having a face-to-face meeting.
That's a good question, Tijani. I'm not exactly sure how the day is going to be split up, and I'm not sure if there are going to be times when the subgroups are going to break out. Of course, for those of us who are involved in multiple subgroups, that will require either difficult decisions or perhaps not all the subgroups breaking out simultaneously. So I'll try to find out from our co-chairs whether there is any subgroup time built into the face-to-face day. But at the very least, in the plenary, I expect that we'll spend some time talking about the topics at play in each subgroup. And we will need to think, and again, we have one more meeting before the plenary, before Hyderabad, a week from today, what we would like to surface to the plenary group, whether it's conclusions, preliminary conclusions, or open questions, or the like. So I think that's a question we can explore on the list and next week as we get closer to kind of Hyderabad planning. So we've now reached past the top of the hour.
If I may, Greg?
Yes, please, Greg, go ahead.
Thank you very much. We need to know if we will have a breakout session for the subgroups, because this will be different and we have to prepare ourselves. Second point, when we will speak about our subgroup in the plenary, I don't think that we will work in that day. We'll present the status of our work, and we will get feedback from the group, from the plenary. This is the aim of the meeting. Otherwise, if we will work there, in the plenary, it will be a problem for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. I agree with both of your points. I think that is what's likely to happen in the face-to-face. And at this point, I don't know of any plans to have any separate breakout times for any of the subgroups. We'll have to explore whether
Greg,
that's possible or not. Yes.
Greg.
Yes. Bernie.
I'm gonna answer that right now.
Thank you.
This was considered, and there are no facilities for subgroups meeting, and there is no time available for that on the agenda. So currently, there are no plans whatsoever and no facilities whatsoever for subgroup meeting. It is all a plenary meeting.
Thank you, Bernie. I guess we can always decide if we want to meet informally, you know, under the third palm tree from the left or something like that, at some point where everyone isn't booked into five different meetings, which may not occur. We could always, you know, at least have an informal call to a table somewhere for those who can contribute, but we'll see. So it's helpful to know what to expect. Thank you, Bernie. Caboose?
Yes, just one last question. Sorry. I think that for the next meeting, we need to at least have an idea of open question that we need to raise in Hyderabad in the plenary in order to have guidance from the entire group. If there is something that we are not sure what is it, and we need some guidance and some advice or guidelines, we have to raise those open questions to the plenary in Hyderabad, because I don't think that there would be any plenary between now and Hyderabad by the CCW, because the one was yesterday, or you know, was cancelled. So if there is no more meeting, we need to discuss the open questions that the people got by the next meeting, when there is something that's still very unclear and people need to have some guidance or advice from the plenary. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. And certainly should have some sense of the open questions and get feedback on those from the group as well. I think we'll need to identify some of the fact questions. And one of the things I think we need to begin thinking about, given the limitations of legal expertise, what questions we might have for ICANN legal and what questions we might need expert legal advice on beyond ICANN legal, whether it's U.S. law advice or advice from elsewhere. So I'll just mention those as additional questions for our for the future. So at this point, Bernie, is that an old hand? Okay, old hand. Given that we're now 7 minutes past the hour, and I think we have made some good progress here, as well as discussed potential issues with lack of progress, encourage everyone to be active on the list, active in editing the document in the so-called suggest mode, and making comments in the margins on what you see in the document, and feel free to start topics in the email list. Don't need the rapporteurs to ask questions. I hope to hear from a wide variety of folk as we move along. So look forward to our meeting next week and to seeing many of you in Hyderabad in less than 2 weeks' time. Thank you, and this meeting is now adjourned.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.